Unit 6. Summary.
Listening activity number 7. You are going to hear a talk about some British customs. Listen to the talk and complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces. Good morning. My name is Marcia Smith, a counsellor here at the Student Services section of the university, and this morning I'd like to talk to you about visiting a British home. This may help you to cope well with your study and social life in Britain. There is a commonly quoted saying in Britain, "An Englishman's home is his castle," which sums up the importance we give to our own bit of private territory. If you are living in a British home, or are invited to visit or stay with someone, it is important to act thoughtfully. For example, be punctual for meals and, if you know you have to miss one, let your host know as soon as possible. Check whether it is convenient for others in the house when you wish to take a bath or wash and dry laundry. And unless your host employs someone to do the housework, you are expected to make your own bed and keep your room clean and tidy yourself. If you don't have a door key, remember to make arrangements if you intend to be out late, and keep your hosts informed of your whereabouts so they don't worry. These suggestions apply whether you are a guest or a lodger, and will help the household to run smoothly. If you're staying as a guest of a British family, or even visiting for one meal, it is customary to take a small gift of flowers, chocolates, or something to drink. Don't spend too much, as this could embarrass your hosts. If you're staying for several days as a guest, it is usual to give a small present when you leave. Usually, you will get onto first-name terms with people you meet quite naturally and quickly. If you're unsure, continue to use their family name, surname, and title until they ask you to use their first name. Older people, and those with whom you have a more formal relationship, may prefer to stick to surnames, for example, Dr. Smith or Mrs. Smith. If you're going to eat with British people or to stay with a British family, you may want to know if there are things that they normally do or don't do at the table. Rather than worry too much about rules, you may like to watch other people and copy what they do. It also helps to understand a few customs first. Both at home and in restaurants, people normally wait until everyone has got their food before they start eating. However, they will start before this if someone says, "Please don't wait," or "Don't let it get cold." When people have started, they keep their cutlery, knives, forks and spoons on the plate when they are not using them, and leave them on the plate when they finish the course. For each course, different cutlery is used. You may also notice that people don't usually spend much time at the table talking, drinking and smoking. In fact, after dinner at home, it's fairly common for everyone to leave the table together and have coffee in the living room. If you are staying with a family or visiting informally, it's usual to offer to help with household chores, for example, clearing the table and washing up the dishes after a meal. Even men are expected to offer, though you may not be accepted. At a more formal meal, however, the host won't normally expect guests to help. Listening activity number 8. You are going to hear a series of lectures on Irish culture. Listen to the first part of the lecture. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
River dance is an expression of modern Irish culture, but it is based on a culture which had its golden era from the 6th to the 9th century. Before that period, Irish culture was oral and based on a love of complicated stories and poetic styles. But in the 6th century, something wonderful happened. Writing was introduced by missionaries. From then on, the culture of Ireland began to develop in ways impossible before and had considerable influence in Northern Europe in the period up to the 9th century. With the invasions which began in the 9th century, this golden age collapsed, and there never was any real recovery. There were no wealthy kings to sponsor the poets and scholars, so the tradition survived only in a form which the peasants liked. The love of story and song did not die, but no real attempt was made to find a distinctive Irish style until the end of the 19th century, when Irish nationalism began to influence writers in English called Anglo-Irish literature. There are many famous writers from that period. There is also William Butler Yeats, George Bernard Shaw, and Samuel Beckett, all of whom have received the Nobel Prize for Literature. In all, Ireland has received the Nobel Literature Prize 4 times. When you consider we have only a population half the size of Beijing, you see how unusual that is. Now, let me talk about the music. The Irish love of music has succeeded in surviving the change from Irish, the native language, to the language of the invader, and has once more begun to blossom and become influential outside the country. Irish music was reduced to being the language of the country people and was dying out as people moved to the cities. Young city people did not want to listen to peasant music, although we were all told it was important. Some efforts were made to make it attractive to city people, but largely without success. More recently, this has begun to change, and since the 1980s has taken off. But modern Ireland has been looking for more than just a revival of traditional music. Many of the most famous popular singers in the world are Irish: U2, Enya, The Cranberries, and many others. There are 10,000 people employed in Ireland in the music industry. Riverdance is an expression of that new interest in the old and that ability to understand the new.
Listening activity number 9. Listen to the second part of our lecture. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Riverdance is not just an expression of self-confidence, a kind of culturally interesting pop song. It tells the story of a people through song and dance. It tells the story of the people whose spirit was broken by an event which occurred in the middle of the last century, but continued to affect the society until 1961, the Great Famine. What is a famine? In 1840, the official population of Ireland was 8 million. They were largely poor and living in the countryside. They were beginning to have an interest in independence, and perhaps had things been different, Ireland might have been independent much earlier. But there was a serious problem in the agricultural system. All crops were grown to pay the rent of the land, and all that was grown to eat was the potato. This was fine until the potato crop failed, as it did from 1845 to 1848. The stories of what happened in those times live on in the popular culture of Ireland, and I won't tell them here, but the result was that 2 million people died or left the country by 1851. When you realise that the population continued to go down until 1961, you can realise what a disastrous effect this famine had on the people. Compared with China, imagine if the famine of 1960 reduced the population by a quarter and it kept falling to less than half of its pre-famine figure. Anybody with ideas left and went to England, America, or Australia. The people left behind were broken by their experiences and, in effect, the famine and its consequences put an end to all serious development in the country until well into this century. The Irish in Ireland lost all hope and self-confidence, and much of our modern culture is about the sadness of that time and the sorrow of saying goodbye to those who left and left well into this century. Ireland has the highest emigration rate of any country in Europe for the last 2 centuries. We even have an expression for this saying goodbye. It is called the American wake. It means the ceremony, like that of a funeral for someone going to America, because you will never see him or her again. Do you know why there is Irish music on the film Titanic? It is because most of the people killed were Irish. The leaving continued until the 1970s, because independence in 1921 was followed by a civil war and an economic depression. Almost every family in Ireland has relatives abroad, and up to the 60s in some places, of a class of 30 graduating from high school all left. Along the west coast, Closed-up houses, from that time falling into ruin, are still common.
Listening activity number 10. Listen to the last part of the lecture. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Last time I said that a lot of Irish people left the country and went to England, America and many other foreign countries. Today I'd like to talk about the emigration. The effects of immigration were not all bad. The immigrants experienced a lot of hardship in their new countries. There is a famous story about a park in Shanghai, where Chinese and dogs were not allowed. Well, in England, until into the 1950s, signs for jobs sometimes read, "Irish need not apply." The immigrants often experience discrimination, but they form many organisations to look after their fellow immigrants. Many of these organisations later became very important. In America, the Irish chose politics as the way forward, and significant cities were controlled by Irish politicians. This movement reached its peak with the election of John F. Kennedy in 1960. His grandparents came from Ireland, and his election had a significant impact in Ireland, helping the process of recovery of self-confidence, which we have today. Today, there are 70 million people of Irish descent living outside Ireland. In America alone, there are 40 million people, and 10 million of these people have 100% Irish background. They carried the culture of their home country with them and adapted it to their new home. They made changes which would be unthinkable in the home country, and we often laughed at the Yankees' Irishness. In fact, any immigrant who came back to live in Ireland, often after many years, found it very difficult to fit into Irish society again. They had been changed by the experience. These immigrants have always had an interest in the old country. The American letter was a letter containing dollars sent back to one's family. More recently, President Clinton has been very influential in bringing peace to the north of Ireland. Riverdance itself was the idea of a dancer who was American, who applied American methods to traditional dancing, and the fusion was immediately popular. Modern Ireland has been able to use the disaster of the last century to learn modern marketing techniques and apply them, without at the same time losing what is distinctive about itself. Riverdance is a demonstration of that distinctiveness.
Listening activity number 11. You are going to hear a talk about universities and colleges in Britain. As you listen to the talk, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces.
Every year, thousands of young people want to study in Great Britain. They come from a range of backgrounds and have varying expectations of what their study in the country will be like and how to apply to the university. Today, I'd like to talk on universities and colleges in Britain. There are 45 universities, 30 polytechnics, and about 1,000 major technical, commercial, education, and art colleges in the UK. In 1973 to 1974, there were over 251,200 full-time students in universities, of whom almost 10% were from overseas. A total of nearly 276,350 students attending full-time courses in establishments of further education, and about 130,270 in colleges of education. University first degree courses in arts and sciences are normally of 3 or 4 years' duration, and, with very few exceptions, students are not admitted for any shorter period of study. The academic year normally extends from October to June and is divided into 3 terms. Information about courses and entrance requirements should be obtained by writing direct to the university at least 12 months before the proposed date of admission. All applications for admission are dealt with by the university's Central Council on Admissions, the UCA, to which all candidates seeking admission to a full-time internal first degree course or a first diploma course of more than 1 year's duration must apply. Full details of the admission procedure are to be found in the UCA handbook, How to Apply for Admission to a University. A copy of this handbook and the standard application form should be obtained from the UCA at P.O. Box 28, Cheltenham and Gloucestershire, GL501HY. The application form must be returned to the UCA by a stated closing date, usually in December, October for Oxford and Cambridge. The UCA will continue to send application forms to universities for consideration at their discretion for a limited period after the 15th of December. But candidates are strongly advised to ensure that their application forms reach the UCA by the stated closing date to help their chances of selection. Candidates who fail to obtain a place in the initial selection period are automatically put into the clearinghouse scheme in June-July, when these candidates' application forms are again sent to those universities which still have vacancies. Students from the following countries should send their application forms to the UCA via the Overseas Student Office of their own country in London: Bahamas, Brunei, Cyprus, Ghana, Guyana, India, Luxembourg, Singapore, Tanzania, Thailand, and Uganda. Graduates of a university in Britain or overseas who wish to take another first degree course should approach the university concerned to require whether it wishes them to apply direct or through the central UCA scheme. Now, let's turn to transfer. It is very rare for a student who has begun a first degree course at one university in Britain to transfer to another British university with a view to completing it there. And there is no provision for the automatic granting of credit for university studies already undertaken. Students who have already completed some university-level study should make inquiries directly with the individual university. To be considered for admission, a candidate must show that his earlier education has qualified him to enter the course and that he speaks, writes, and understands English sufficiently well. The usual minimum qualifications for entry to a first degree course in a university are good passes in the General Certificate of Education, the British School Leaving Examination, either 3 passes at ordinary level and 2 advanced level, or 1 at ordinary level and 3 at advanced level. A certificate which gives admission to a university in the candidate's own country will be taken into consideration for admission to a British university. But a university may still require passes in some subjects of the GCE, or an equivalent examination. It should be noted that possession of the minimum entrance requirements does not guarantee admission. Selection is competitive, and each application is judged on its merits. The British Council offices overseas and the Schools Council, 160 Great Portland Street, London W1N6LL, are prepared to offer advice on the acceptability of specific overseas qualifications in place of the British General Certificate of Education. A copy of the original certificate and, where appropriate, an approved translation should accompany all inquiries.
Listening activity number 12. You are going to hear a talk on Canada. As you listen to the talk, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Good morning and welcome to this talk on Canada. Many people think of Canada as a land of ice and snow. They think of it as a young country with few inhabitants, a country of English-speaking white people. While some of this is true, it is also an inaccurate description of the country we call Canada. Canada lies in the northern half of the continent of North America. The most northern parts of Canada are sometimes called the land of the midnight sun, because at certain times of the year the sun never sets and is still shining faintly at midnight. This northern part of Canada is cold and mostly snow-covered all year round. Most of the people who live in this northern part of Canada are called Inuit or Dene. They were once called Eskimos. They are the original people of this land and are part of what are called the First Nation. As we move to the more southern parts of Canada, the land changes and so does the people. Moving from east to west in southern Canada, we travel from the Atlantic provinces of Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, New Brunswick, and Prince Edward Island. These small provinces with small populations border on the Atlantic Ocean. The land in these provinces is not very fertile, so fishing, forestry, and mining are the main industries, although in some small areas, agriculture is also important. If we travel west from the Atlantic provinces, we come to central Canada, composed of the large provinces of Quebec and Ontario. Both provinces are rich in natural resources, have fertile land, and are the centres of industry for Canada's largest cities. Toronto and Montreal are found in these provinces. The province of Quebec is the centre of French language and culture in Canada. In fact, Montreal is the second largest French-speaking city in the world after Paris. Finally, in the far west of Canada, we come to the province of British Columbia. This province is separated from the prairies by the Rocky Mountains and is bounded on the west by the Pacific Ocean. British Columbia is often called simply the West Coast. British Columbia is an attractive place for tourists because of its mild climate, spectacular mountains, seacoast, and beautiful forests. Agriculture, forestry, shipping and fishing are major industries in British Columbia. The people of this land of Canada are as varied as its landscape. The original settlers, those we call the people of the First Nations, came from Asia by crossing the Bering Strait from Siberia to Alaska. In their new environment, they developed many new languages and cultures. In the 16th century, the first Europeans arrived in eastern Canada. They came from Britain and France. By making treaties with the original inhabitants, they gradually established colonies in eastern and central Canada. After a war with France, Britain took over the French colonies in Quebec and eastern Canada. By the end of the 18th century, all of Canada was under British rule. From this time until the present century, most of the immigrants to Canada were British, Scottish, and Irish. In this century, however, Canada has had an influence of settlers from all over the world. There are now hundreds of thousands of people from Asia, Africa, and South America who now call Canada their home.
Listening activity number 13. You are going to hear a conversation between two students. They are talking about the English bars. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than three words in the spaces.
Kevin, could you tell me something about the bars? I have never been to a bar. You see, Steve, my classmate, has invited me to go to a bar tonight.
I see. You know, the word bar means a room in a pub. We say the bar when we mean the part of that room where drinks are kept. Soon after you go into the pub, you'll realize that nobody comes to the tables to take orders or money. Instead, customers go to the bar to buy their drinks.
I see. People will go to the bar directly to get their drinks and don't wait for someone to come to take their orders.
That's right. People don't queue at the bar, but they do wait till it's their turn.
Oh, how do I pay? I mean, do I pay directly after I get the drink, or do I have to wait till I'm ready to leave like I do in a restaurant?
It's not the custom to pay for all your drinks when you're ready to leave. Instead, you pay at the bar each time you get drinks. It helps if you're ready to pay as soon as you're served. and you'll notice that many people wait with their money in their hands.
I see. Do I have to give a tip?
No. It's not the custom to give a tip. It's very common for friends to buy their drinks together in rounds. This means that each person takes a turn to buy drinks for everybody in the group. It's faster and easier, both for you and for the person serving, if drinks are bought in this way. Naturally, you don't have to have a drink in each round if you don't want one.
That's interesting.
When you're looking for somewhere to sit, remember that people have to leave their seats to get drinks, etc. So an empty seat may not in fact be available to you. If you're not sure whether a seat is free, ask someone sitting near it. When it's time for another drink, people usually take their glasses back to the bar to be filled again. If you're leaving, the friendly thing to do is to take your glasses back to the bar, thank the person who's been serving you, and say goodbye or goodnight.
Thank you, Kevin. This helps me a lot. By the way, what kinds of drinks are available in pubs?
Well, you can get both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. Beside alcoholic drinks, such as beer and wine, there is cider, which is made from apples, usually sold in bottles, port, a type of thick sweet wine from Portugal, sherry, which is a type of wine from Spain, and spirits. These are a kind of strong alcoholic drinks, such as whiskey and brandy.
What about non-alcoholic? I don't drink alcohol.
Well, they offer all kinds of fruit juices, such as orange and tomato. These drinks are usually sold in small bottles. And soft drinks, we often call sweet drinks, like Coke and Fanta. They are normally sold in small bottles or cans. And lemonade, which is a clear and sweet drink made with carbonated water. They also serve cordials.
What are cordials?
Cordials are strong and sweet drinks tasting of fruit, such as lime cordial, black currant cordial. They are often added to other drinks or drunk with water.
I don't like sweet drinks. Are there any other non-alcoholic drinks?
Yes, mineral water, but it's not available in all pubs.
Kevin, one more question. What is VAT? I saw this on most goods in Britain.
Well, VAT stands for Value Added Tax. The price shown on most goods in Britain includes a tax of 15%. If you use the retail export scheme, this tax can be returned to you if you take the goods with you when you leave Britain. You may have to spend a certain sum of money before you qualify for the scheme, and you'll have to show your passport. Ask in the shop if they operate the retail export scheme. If they do, the shop assistant will explain how you can get the tax back and fill in a form with you. VAT is also charged on hotel, restaurant bills, theater, cinema tickets, and car hire.
Are these refundable?
No, it's not refundable in these cases.
Thank you very much. I really learned a lot.
Listening activity number 14. You are going to hear a talk about the English pubs. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
In English pubs, the food is usually plain but of good quality. In fact, to taste good traditional English food, you would do well to visit a reputable pub. Many businessmen habitually have lunch in a pub near their office. In the country, the pub is often part of an inn where you can put up for the night. The Englishman's favourite drink is beer. There are 3 different methods of serving beer in Britain. As you'd expect, some beer is served in bottles. Beer that comes from a tap is called draft beer, and there are 2 different methods of serving it. Keg beer is served with modern method, which uses a gas called carbon dioxide, and traditional draft has no gas in it, and a pump is used to pull the beer up the pipe and out of the tap. Keg beer is served colder than traditional draft. It's easier to look after, and some keg beers are sold almost everywhere in Britain. This means that you can always have exactly the same drink in any pub that sells a particular keg beer. Traditional British beer is probably quite different from the beer in your country. It has no gas in it, and it's not served very cold. But this is not a mistake. Traditional beer drinkers will tell you that this allows you to taste the beer better. Traditional draught is not always looked after as well as it should be, but in a good pub, a traditional draught beer drinker will tell you there can be no better drink. There are a lot of different breweries, companies that make beer, in Britain, but they make the same types of beer, and you can see them in the list below. Lager is the kind of beer that is common in many countries. Normally keg is served cold. Strong lager is often available in bottles. Bitter is the most popular kind of British beer. It tastes slightly bitter and can be keg or traditional draught. Most pubs have more than one kind. Guinness is a thick, almost black, bitter-tasting Irish beer. Pale ale is less strong and a bit sweeter than bitter and often is keg. Mild is a fairly sweet beer, often dark, not as strong as bitter. It can be keg or traditional. It cannot be found everywhere. Bottled beers are sometimes served cold. There are several kinds available. For example, light ale like pale ale. Brown ale is a brown, often rather sweet beer. Stout is a very dark beer. Law regulates the pub's opening times. Local variations are possible, but usually a pub is open from 11:30 to 3 o'clock, and from 5:30 to 10:30 or 11 o'clock. Betting is forbidden in pubs. Children are not allowed on licensed premises, which may mean that father and mother cannot have a quiet drink together if children are with them. In the old days, when people drank too much and pubs were often rowdy, the law against children entering pubs was a wise one. Today, drunkenness is much less frequent than it was, say 50 years ago. It would be quite wrong to consider the average English pub as anything other than a respectable, friendly place that provides good drink, good food, and a pleasant social atmosphere. Far too often the foreigner has read accounts of sordid 19th century drinking places, haunted by people whose one desire was to drink as much as they could afford as quickly as possible.